si può scivolare, se così si può dire, questioni di cuore. Pensiero stupendo, nasce un poco strisciando.
You're listening to KBOO KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. Next up is Calculated Conversation, and thank you so much to our host, Hedda.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The events committee meets the third Monday of every month at 5 o'clock p.m.
Yo, man, it's a lot of brothers out there flaking and perpetrating, but scared to kick reality.
Man, you've been doing all this dope producing. You ain't had a chance to show them what time it is.
So what you want me to do?
Spread yourself.
Back in the house. This is the wonderful Calculated Conversation radio show. I'm your host, David Jefferson, and
Ken Jones.
Ken Jones. We at the studios. We bless. We alive. And we got more and more conversation for you today. And with that being said, a very important guest, too, that's going to really, really bust a few things down. So,
yes, I'm.
We excited, man. We excited. We talked a little bit about the pipeline play. And we have you, the star, man.
I am one of the stars. Yeah, me and Ramona Lisa Alexander.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
So the Pipeline Show, very, very powerful a play at the Portland Playhouse, and one of the stars, Letevin Alexander, mm-hmm. is in the house.
Yep,
played the character of Amari Joseph, one of the most powerful.
Right.
Performance I'm probably seen, man.
Hey, you know, like, appreciate that. Like,
and I really hope people go see this show. Again, it's I think the last day is March 15th.
Yep, mm-hmm.
And that is a Sunday.
Yep,
and so if you get a chance, look up the Portland Playhouse online, PortlandPlayhouse.com, right?
PortlandPlayhouse.org.
Okay.
Yep. You can also go to ConfrontationTheater.org. Either one is take you to the tickets.
Good, yeah, good, man. We blessed to have you here, man. How you feeling?
I'm great, man. I'm happy to be here with two brothers, man.
Yes.
Two strong brothers. So
yes.
I'm happy, bro.
Yeah, yeah. It's due, man. It's due.
Yes,
about the play, man. Like, how? Like, before we get into the actual play, like,
yeah.
How did you get into acting, and how long you been acting?
I've been acting over 10 years now. I don't know exactly how long. My mama would tell you I've been acting all my life, but that's been more unconscious. No, for real, man. When I was like a jit, like when I was like 3-4 years old, I used to wear like I had these full body Power Ranger or Batman costumes, you know.
Yeah.
And like most kids would, but like I took it serious. Like I would literally go out, I knew all the moves, all the choreography. I like, there's this literally this picture of me jumping off this truck with my back with my cape spread, and I got like a stick in my hand, and like it was a perfect shot. I hope that like my mama saves that.
So all we needed was that pow.
That's all you need, bro. That's all you need. And so like, and like one of my favorite movies, like a Low Down Dirty Shame, you know, with Keenan and I.
Yes, that's one of my favorites.
And so I'm in pre-K. I put this movie in my backpack and I go to my teacher. I'm like, hey, can we show this to my students?
Yeah.
And I have like, you know, the scene where he gets clean, he gets bald, you know.
Yeah, he put his suit on.
Yeah, I do that every time, bro. Every time. And so, and my mama loved it, and like the neighborhood loved it. And so like, so I have been doing that like all of my life. And then I felt like I was a great student. And I love ball. You know, I played football, basketball, and baseball from like
okay.
three until I graduated high school. When I was a senior in high school, what's similar between me and Omari is I was almost expelled from high school. Mm. I was suspended and was the principal recommended that I be expelled. And so me and my mom had to go before the school board and plead our case and argue about, you know, or say why I shouldn't right. be expelled. And then you got like 10 people sitting up there looking down on you.
Jeez.
And all I needed was one person to vouch for me and I would have been cool.
Yeah.
It was, again, 10 people. It took the eighth person to say yes. It was a black man, the only like blacksmith in the city who knew my family. I'm from a small country town in North Florida. And so, you know, like, and I kind of figured, okay, yep, she's going to say no. Yep, he's going to say no. So when this guy, he vouched for me, I was like, whew, I'm good.
Yeah.
And then another white guy vouched for me. So I had to do like 12 weeks of rehab or whatever and to come back. It was some crazy stuff. But so I got reinstated, and so I'm trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do with my life? Because I wanted to go and study and be a lawyer, but that didn't turn out right because my grades failed because of the suspension. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll figure out what to do while I hoop. And then me and my coach got into it, and he pretty much benched me for the rest of the season.
Jeez.
So I'm really sitting here like, man, what is going on? So I'm with my girl at the time in school, and she goes, hey, babe, because I like had all these TA classes, and she's like, hey, I'm going to go to our drama to my drama class. You want to come and sit in for a bit? I'm like, we don't got drama. I was an ambassador for our school. Like, I knew everything there was to know about our school.
Almost.
Almost. And so I'm like, I don't believe it. She's like, well, come and see it. So we went into the class, and the teacher was there. She's like, oh, hey, Latavia, you want to come and read with us? And they were doing Taming of the Shrew.
Okay.
So I'm just going along with that. I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'm pretty good at this. I'm a strong reader, whatever. So I do this like this thing online. It's like exploretalent.com. If you are a young actor, don't do that. Please don't do that. It just worked out. It just so happens to work out for me. But I did Explore Talent. Got a gig down in Kissimmee, Florida. I went down and shot a film. And while I'm there, the guys on set are like, man, you got a great voice. You got great instincts. You should go and learn. You know, you should go and study. I'm like, no, I just learned the lines and came and did this, and you like it, so
what
no.
What am I studying for?
Right. So I'm like, nah, whatever. So it's like a 3 to 4 hour drive from Kissimmee back to my hometown. So on the ride back, my mom's like, so Tev, how was it? Like, what you think? And I'm like, oh, it was cool, Mom. You know, she was like, well, what you gonna go to school for? You figured it out? I'm like, nah, I don't know. I'll probably do like community college and take 2 years to figure it out. She went, no, you're too smart. You're not going to community college. You're gonna go to a 4-year university. So what you gonna do? I was like, well, I don't know. She was like, why don't you study acting? And I was like, why, Mom? I know what to do. She said, well, look, if you're going to study, nobody can ever tell you that you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
So I was like, why she got to make so much sense? So I was like, okay, all right. And then, you know, then I got a college mentor who pretty much told me, FAMU, Florida Agriculture and Mechanical University. And so I was like, FAMU. And then when I got to FAM, the black love, the black excellence, the black intellectuals, the black, it was blackness at its like zenith. I had never seen so many smart, so many passionate, so many driven, so many ambitious black people. Like,
wow.
I mean, like it, like from like, it didn't matter if they were male or female, gay, straight, whatever. Like if you were there, 9 times out of 10, you were gonna be somebody when you left
That's FAMU?
That's FAMU.
Where's it at?
Tallahassee, Florida.
Florida, okay.
Yep, the highest of seven hills, man. And so I went there, I studied theater, and I fell in love by the end of the year, and I was like, yep, I'm gonna do this for the rest of my life.
Nice.
So yeah, man, so it was a you know, wasn't intentional for me to end up here, but again, speaking about, you know, vibes and energy, is I put out what I kind of wanted for myself and kind of let go, and I just let God and the universe kind of like lead me, and I just kept saying yes to what made sense.
Yes.
What felt right, you know what I mean? And so and so here I am.
Okay, so you don't live here, right?
I do now.
Oh, you do now?
I do now. How I've been here 5 years now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I came here straight out of college. I graduated 2014. I met Nikki Weaver, who is the education director and co-founder of the Playhouse, at SETC. That's short for the Southeastern Theater Conference in Alabama. And she loved my audition, and she called me into this tiny hotel room, and she told me, she was like, look, you can come with us. It's free housing. You'll write and perform your own one-man show. You'll get to, you know, be in 3 main stage productions. I was like, oh, this is dope.
Yeah.
Mm.
Let's do it. You know what I mean? And mind you, I knew nothing about Portland mm-hmm. or, you know, I was telling you earlier, like, the only thing I knew about Oregon was the Oregon Trail, the game, mm-hmm. the Ducks, and the Beavers, and that's just because of sports.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Outside of that, I couldn't have told you two things about Portland or Oregon, you know what I mean? And so... I took a chance on this lady who was 8 months pregnant at the time. She was huge, and she's a small little lady, and that belly was like, it was crazy. And so I was like, all right, let's do it. So, right. So that's pretty much how I got out here.
Yeah, you just ran with the vibes.
Exactly. It's like it felt right.
That's what they want you to do. That's what they want you to do. It's a reason for all that, right?
Yep. Yeah. It's a reason, man.
One of the things I had to ask too when he showed up before we got on air, I've been trying to guess his age since I had watched the show. And I was like, this is that melanin thing that is anywhere between 17 and 30. It's somewhere right. in that range.
I love that range, man, because as an actor, it's like to convincingly be able to play that. That's a nice range
right.
for me right now. Right. I'm like, that's what, 13 years?
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I hope that when it moves up, I can go from 30 to 53 or right. whatever, you know what I mean? Yeah. And just keep me working, keep fluctuating.
Yeah, you definitely didn't take me out of the character. You know, sometimes some people play a role and it's hard for me to jump into it based on what age they're supposed to be.
Right.
And this, I was watching teenagers. Yeah. That's what I saw.
Hey, that's big, man, because like, so my voice is what it is.
Yeah.
And so when I do roles where I'm a teenager and I'm like, geez, how am I gonna, all
right. Right.
I gotta figure it out. But then, of course, when we were all whatever, 17, mm-hmm. our voices are pretty much what it is now.
Yeah.
It was just maybe not as, didn't have all the bass.
Right.
Maybe we slipped up a little more than we do now.
Right.
But the voice was pretty much the same. You know what I mean? Yeah. So when I thought that, I went, okay, so don't stress too much about the voice. It's more about the mannerism. It's the physicality.
Yeah.
It's I can't be broad shoulder, still, you know what I mean, feet planted. I gotta figure out, okay, how do I make myself smaller when I get nervous? What do I do? Because nervous Letevin right now, I don't fidget with my clothes.
Right.
You know, I'm probably like hands here, something like that.
Yeah.
But as a kid, I probably was like fixing my shirt because I'm uncomfortable in my skin.
Mm.
Maybe I just hit a growth spurt and I haven't really figured out that, oh, my arms really are that long or whatever. So I'm like finding these little things to just pull out in the moment just so that you all can see, oh, he's uncomfortable, he's fidgety. It's probably because he's young. Mm-hmm. And I let y'all fill in the blanks and do all that. But so I'm just finding little things to kind of just like bring home the point that I'm 17, y'all.
Right.
I'm 17.
Right.
Right. So. I'm guessing about 26.
That's good. That's close. 28. That's close. That's
I'm about
close.
To say that. Dang. All right.
91. Shout out to all my 91 babies.
Hey, look.
Where we at, man? It's that was just an amazing show, man.
Thanks, bro. Thanks.
Did you know how powerful that was when you got the script, man?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. I knew from the minute. So Brian Weaver, the artistic director of the Portland Playhouse, and me, we have been trying to figure out how can we collaborate on a project together for like 2 years. And he sent me a script, and I'm like, nah, I don't think it's that one. I sent him a script, and he'd be like, nah, I don't think that's the one. And then when he sent me Pipeline, I was like, oh, Dominique Morisot, this is dope, because she's like hot all over the country right now. And I knew before I finished the play that, yes, I want to do this. The language, the topic on what it was talking about, showing all, how, if you notice, everybody in the show, like the show kind of takes place over 2 days, everybody is having a terrible day. And if you just shift perspectives ever so slightly, you'll see how terrible everybody's day was. And yet how all of everybody's day is kind of correlates to the next person's. You know what I mean? And you get to see all of these little pipelines between person to person, person to school, school to home life, whatever. It's also like, of course, there's the main pipeline, the school to prison pipeline.
Yes.
But then there's these relational pipelines that I saw when reading it. Didn't see all of them until, of course, we're up and working at, you know, and crafting moments. But I saw enough to go, oh, this is powerful. This is what we need. I can hear the characters, because that is exactly what I know my little cousin talks like. That's what I sound like. That's what my sister sound, whoever.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, yeah, this is written by us, for us, and about us. And I was like, great. It's like, I have no other questions. My next question, well, really, my next question was, who are we going to get to direct it?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I was like, as a producer, yes. And let's move on.
So that leads me to a question of wanting to know, like, the importance of telling stories in our voice,
mm-hmm.
right? And how that translates too, because I do know as a person viewing the play, I kept thinking that it doesn't sound weird.
Mm-hmm.
There's everything about it. Rather it was a curse word, rather it was a N-bomb drop, whatever it was that was in there,
right.
It worked.
Yeah.
And I think we had a talk maybe a month ago or so, kind of discussing that, you know, on our end. So what are your thoughts on, you know, the importance of being able to tell Black stories and Black voices coming from Black mind and Black experience?
Right. Oh, I think it's major. It's major because the more specific you can get with a story, the more universal the themes and ideas will be.
Mm.
The more I can tell you and show you the hood and show you how we live in the hood. If you are, say, from like a slum in India, mm-hmm. you can kind of see, oh yeah, that mm-hmm. it won't be the same structure, it won't be the same house, it won't be the same people, mm-hmm. but the little stuff, the universal yeah. things are there. The relationship right. between mm-hmm. friend to friend, boyfriend to girlfriend, daughter to son, to father, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
those are the things that I think if we just say, this is how we go through it, mm-hmm. this is what we go through, this is how we interact, you will then, or they will then be able to say, oh yeah, I see, that is my dad.
Mm.
My dad don't say the N-word mm-hmm. or whatever, or my dad, you know, he's not like that, but that is my dad,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I learned that really studying August Wilson's work. August Wilson is my favorite playwright. Shout out to August Wilson. He passed 15 years ago, and so this year will be the 15th year that he's passed.
Hmm.
And he's, for me, the greatest Black playwright ever because he does that so well.
Hmm.
He wrote more than 10 plays, but 10 plays that he wrote span the entire 20th century. They call it the century cycle.
Oh.
He has a play that takes place in the 1900s, the 10s, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Hey.
Yeah. Hmm. And every single play went to Broadway. Two of them got a Pulitzer Prize, Fences and The Piano Lesson.
Which Fences is?
He has a theater on Broadway named after him, and all of this has come out of him saying, I am going to put Black people on stage in all of its glory, in all of its ugliness, mm. in all of its beauty, in all of its poetry, in every little thing about Blackness, I am going to throw on stage.
Mm.
And white people fell in love with it.
Mm.
Latino people fell in love with it. That show, that playwright and his work is the thing that put the Portland Playhouse on the map. You know, mm-hmm. they did his show, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which Denzel just finished filming this okay. past summer, which blew up. Then he turned around and did Radio Golf, which takes place in the 90s. And that put Portland Playhouse, like, on the map in a major way in the city. So much okay. that, like, they had so many people coming to see the show. The city told them they had to, like, get out of the area.
Oh.
Because it's a commercial property in a residential area.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. You know? And so the city came and was like, no, we're gonna zone y'all. Y'all got to go out. And so that next season, they were at the World Trade Center like that whole year, fighting the legal battle until it got to the voting, or when the community had to come in yeah. and speak on behalf. It was like hundreds, like it's documented, hundreds of people there to speak on behalf of the Portland Playhouse and showed up. And it was such a landmark event that the Portland Playhouse made the city create a new zoning policy so that now there can be residential businesses, commercial businesses in residential areas.
Hey.
And that was, again, all came out of August Wilson's work.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, had they not done that, I mean, maybe it would have happened sometime later, but had yeah. they not done August yeah. Wilson,
who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? So yeah, so that's yeah. why I think, man, the more specific you can make a story, the more specific you can make ideas and topics and themes, the more universal they actually will be.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to popular belief, people think that if I just go up on stage and say the N-word all the time mm-hmm. and dap people up and talk how we talk and move how we move, mm-hmm. that they'll think, okay, no, that's just a Black show. It's like, no, yes, but no. It's like, mm-hmm. it is us, but you will see that, I say that too. I just don't say the N-word. I say right. something else.
Or right. Right.
Whatever the case may be.
But they carry the same energy.
They carry yeah. the same energy. Because we are one race, which I hate when we call each other races. Like,
right.
we are one race.
Right.
Literally, the difference is skin deep. Literally.
Right. That's it.
That's it.
It's funny because, I mean, before we got on air, we were just talking about, you know, the idea of calculated conversation and what and information that's missing, where people think that don't understand, like, how similar we can be if we can get past the, you know, external qualities, right? And I think what you're referencing in the show is an amazing job of also, I think, you know, showing that in disclosing that, man. And it's powerful, man.
Appreciate it.
As I see the show, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I see the show, I'm thinking, you know, I'm relating to that. I'm a black man, you know, I'm from the streets, and, you know, all those things and those aggressions and those things we go through in school that it seems like nobody understands. How important is a show like this, The Pipeline, how important is it for people who deal with black men on any level? Like whether it's teaching, whether it's you got your boyfriend's black, your son's black, or your best friend. Like, how important is it for them to be able to get a chance to look at this show and say, wait a minute, you know, like, I was unaware of this.
It's extremely important, man, because the more information you know, the more you can connect and understand the person. And what I love about theater is when you pay a ticket, it's like a movie or whatever, when you pay a ticket to come and see something, we have at least got you for like the next 20-30 minutes, you know, give or take 5 minutes or whatever, but we got you because you paid your money to come. And you come, you get to sit in the theater. I'm not talking to you, so you don't, you won't get so uncomfortable, you won't get out and leave, you know what I mean, you won't feel offended or whatever, because I'm talking to the actor on stage. And then you get to just have this moment of just sitting in this house and going, okay, I'm going to throw away all of my thoughts and perceptions about what these people are and who they will be. And then once the lights come back up and we do the curtain call, hopefully you've been moved, you've had time to sit there, and now you understand a little more. I do this show called Hands Up with the Red Door Project. It's about police brutality. We've been doing this since 2016, and the beautiful thing about that is Kevin Jones, the founder of the Red Door Project and the director of the show, says you don't have to agree. You don't have to disagree. You just got to be willing to listen. Just be willing to listen. And that's it. That's all you got to do. And just from that, and people's then, like, their impact, like how they are moved, and how they come up to me after the show crying, saying, I didn't, whether some people say I didn't know, some people say, okay, I think I know what to do now, or whatever it is. And that's why I love theater. That's why I really love the arts. You know, like, you have the, it puts it, the onus on you to make the choice. But what we do is we have, and what you have done by coming, is you have at least given yourself time and space to at least listen so that you can understand or hear, maybe not understand, to hear another perspective. Yeah. And just that alone is, I think, what we don't do in real life, because in real life, I'm here and I'm talking to you and I'm looking at you. So if you say something that offends me, I got full range to turn and walk out of here, you know what I mean? Or to fire off on you, now we got to scrap or whatever, you know what I mean? And so, and but in the theater, that's not the case. And I love that. So yeah, man, yeah, I think, and also why this is important and what you'll get out of it is, in the show, my character Omari gives instructions. He gives instructions, you know, and I think in those instructions are things that, whether you are a friend to a black man, a mother or a father to a black man, a lover to a black man, whatever, these instructions will at least help you find some entryway into going, okay, I can better understand you. Right. I can better help you find some healing. I can better help you kind of like move from this point to the next point. Or I just understand your rage, black man. I just understand, and you're not crazy.
Right.
And I'm not crazy. Like, we're both not crazy. I see what's happening. I believe it. I understand it. Cool. Be mad.
Right. Yes,
because I think that's another thing that's mentioned in the play. We don't have space to be mad.
Look, you extrapolated that so well throughout the play, of building on that concept.
Yeah.
And that's one of the most powerful parts that I caught from it leading up to the steps.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, man. The playwright, in the character description in the play, my character is described as a man, a young man, who is rageful without release, full of rage without release. And that's like, there was a few other things, but the director was like, go through the character description, find one or two things that really resonate with you, and just kind of like, you know, just simmer on that a little bit. And I did, and I was like, oh, this is the thing that I'm, that's going to be at the heart of my performance from the top of the show through the end of the show. Is this, like, if I could manifest, it's like the rage is pushing against my skin, but it won't get out. It just won't get out. And I'm mad, and I don't even know why I'm mad sometimes. You know what I mean? I think it's my dad, or I think it's my mom, or I think it's the school, or I think it's my girlfriend, but it is and isn't any of that. You know what I mean? And so, like, that's the confusion. And I think, by giving black men, just black people too, because black women also get the loud, you know, B-I-T-C-H thing, you know. And so to give us the room to be upset and to let that energy go, so that then we can let some other energy into our bodies, is so important. And we don't get that. And when we do let it go, we're called animals, we're called whatever, which it was another big thing I focused on in this. The word animal, or things that relate to animals, was all throughout the play. But it was animal, tame, attack, savage, unleashed, all this stuff. And that kept messing with my psyche. And so every time it came up and I was in the scene, it triggers me, you know, because we are seen as animals who, and even animals, when they get upset, what do? They lash out, and then they curl back, and they go on about their business. But we don't get that luxury. And I think by seeing this play and by hearing Omari's instructions, you get to kind of get some steps into understanding, okay, here's how I can help you help yourself.
You know, this and not to go off on a tangent, but this specifically just reminded me of something last night, a situation and a conversation that I had following the situation was essentially painting that picture. And after yesterday being on that road, coming to hear us recording, getting to the house, went to go pick up a package that I had diverted from FedEx to a Walgreens, went to pick it up, and had ID, tracking number, but being that I diverted it, which it was originally going to my office, I didn't have an ID with my office address on it. And he's like, yeah, we can't. I'm like, well, I just read the stuff off to you. I gave you all the information. Like, my name is on there. The number is in my email. I knew to come here. This is a pretty big scheme for this little bit of a box. You know what I'm saying? So, but he's like, no cuts. And as I'm talking, he's like, well, do you have a pay stub? He was just going through this stuff, and it was just, I'm like, I can pull my LinkedIn up. It even have the place, and you can Google that place and the number, you know. And but I'm feeling that coming, and I had to catch myself though, because I was like, for one, I'm in Lake Oswego, and I was like, I'm burnt. I don't have the control right now after this whole day. This has been a long day, so I just my willpower is not strong right now. And I caught that and thought, now if I would have really made a back and forth out of this, because I'm sure almost anyone in that situation would have been, you know, a little upset and frustrated. But then I thought, like, if I started going back and forth with dude, this could escalate into a crazy place. And had to just give one of those and just bounce. And on the drive, having a conversation, it was just like, I see people going crazy on employees, and you know, and I have to always think, not that I would do it, but in these situations, because also he had, you know, just the attitude from the jump. And it was one of those, I already knew this was going to be a little bit of a back and forth, but it was, if I would have tried to engage, it's happened too many times in my life where I'm engaging with that same energy. Now all of a sudden I'm the aggressor. The frustration that comes with that, of how many times it's almost like having to bite that tongue and again turn the other cheek and just walk away in order to avoid everything else that could come with it. And as you say, it's not being able to have a bad day, not being able to just be burnt, and especially when you voice that, and it's like, no, I'm not there. And being able to have that space, that is important. And I think that's even going just from home and everything else. I think that you take away, or one of the scenes we were talking about, where you and your mom were having an interaction, and you guys were essentially having two different conversations.
I was hurt during that part, you know, like, because we go through that all the time. Like, you know, looking, her trying to gather your information, but just continuously looking from her own lenses, and you being as clear as day, it's not that. But you're looking at that. It's not that. You know, we're talking about two different aspects of the same thing, but a lot of people don't realize that they're having, they're talking about different things, and so you can't really solve a problem, which is why a lot of times we don't even like to you know, disclose information on how we feeling, because most likely it's going to be taken the wrong way.
And right. then we're going to get mad all over again. Yes. And it's like, and here we go. You know yes. I mean? It's crazy that, like, that conversation is, like, if we were talking about race and it was a white person and a black person, it would be the same yeah. thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're like, I don't understand what you're saying. Yes. No, like, and that still doesn't justify why you... And so if it's a teacher and, you know, whatever, it's still, it's the same idea. It's yeah, like, right. look, son, you shouldn't have done it. Okay, that's your teacher. He has the right. And he's like, no, ma, no, right. no. You're not hearing me. We're not talking about
who the teacher that. Is. Yeah. Right? We're not talking about who the student and who the teacher is, yeah. you know? And so, yeah, I wanted to go down there and say, you don't hear what he's saying. Yeah, right. Like, that's how I felt, man. I was yeah. like, he clear as day.
Yeah.
You know, and just yeah. that she kept missing it. Oh, it was hurting me, man.
Yeah.
Because again, that's part of why we even have a show like this, because we realize that these conversations are being miscalculated yep. on a major level, you yep. know. And so speaking of that part and me being able to identify with that, you know, what Cam was talking about, that identifying with us not having space,
mm-hmm.
Omari was able to, I think, provide a voice.
Mm.
For black men who mm. really didn't know how to say,
yeah.
this is how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yes, a lot sir. Of people feel like that, but they don't know
they
how,
don't
to,
know
say
how
it.
To say it. Yep.
But he yeah. said it for him, and yeah. he said it exactly how it needed to be said. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's powerful, like, all around the board, because yeah. they say that we, the most loved and the most feared at the same time, you know, that's a lot of communication coming our way.
That's a lot.
And they're asking us to say a lot of things, too. We like, I don't really yeah. want to talk to y'all.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean? Right. Because, of, you know. Because
you see it so much.
But, like, I can't, but I don't have the words to tell you why and what I need, because I was born this way, and I've been hit with these things my whole life, and right. I don't really know how to
yeah.
how to really put them in words.
Yeah, I love and I love that, like, for Omari, what I found, like, in that scene with my mom, mm-hmm. I don't really tell her what spurred me off. If mm-hmm. you notice, like, mm-hmm. I start, I say, I don't, and then I go mm-hmm. on and I keep talking about the teacher or whatever, yeah. right? I don't even tell her about me and my dad in that morning
right.
and so on and so forth. And so when I went, like, and so in my mind, I'm like, oh, that's because Omari himself still doesn't know how to communicate. Like, he's feeling this stuff. And I kept asking myself, why doesn't he tell his mom? Right. What is it about him or him and his dad, or his dad, that keeps him from saying, Mom, here's the other piece that you're missing, that if I had told her that, she probably would have went, oh, I see. Maybe she would have went that way, or maybe she would have went, oh, no, that's the excuse. Oh, you're yeah, finding it. Right. I don't know. Who knows? But I think that was just something that I kind of, like, I chewed on for a bit about this, and speaking of communication, about, like, why do I choose to omit this piece of information?
Right.
Which is a very critical piece of information.
Yes.
Because had this thing not happened, the next thing wouldn't have happened.
Right.
And so it's risky. And so as much as we, as definitely Omari is able to express himself, there is also a version of him where he doesn't know, because he's like, I don't know, should I say this, or should I, yeah, or if I shouldn't, right, or right. whatever. And that's because, like, we're not given that space. You know what I mean? That's more space. Give us space to be like, okay, so here's the real truth.
We don't have listeners.
We don't got listeners.
You know? And when you talk, it was just misinterpreted immediately.
Yep. Uh-huh.
As clear as it was,
yep.
you know, the information still didn't get through, you yep. know? And I think that's a true reflection of, like, yes. life and how how we live, and why certain relationships are strained.
Yep.
Is just not having parallel information, or refusing to acknowledge it, because, like we talk about on the show all the time, people are not comfortable until they feel understood.
Mm-hmm.
That. And somebody's not understood is gonna be a little bit frustrated, and then that's when you don't get the space,
mm-hmm.
and now you aggressive. But in fact, I just want to be understood.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I just right. want you to understand, like, this is me. Like, you know, this is my ID. This is my package. How would I know to come here? Like, you got to put the pieces together, and there got to be something you can do, because you know that, like, I'm, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, and that's what happens, man.
And it's like, crazy. The more you get, like, passionate about something, like in your situation, the more they shut down. It's like, no, I'm just trying to explain that this is what it is.
Yes.
Just like in Omar, like, the more passionate I got, the more my mom kept shutting down and kept using mm-hmm. this triggering language.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Sure. Like, come on, man.
I'll be the first to admit, you know, like, I like to think I'm a great communicator and that I'm clear and I'm, you know, empathetic and, you know, and I can see from other lenses. But I will admit that, you know, I will definitely try to get the information across, you know, like Amari did. I'll try to be clear. As I keep getting misinterpreted, though, man, like, I'm not the good guy I used to be. I'm not the happy dude no more. I'm not the intelligent guy anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just frustrated and I'm tired and my voice is raising, my blood pressure is raising. Like, you know, and now it's like, oh, you're angry. Yeah, you're angry at me. Why are you getting mad? You know what I mean? It's like...
Hey, and that goes into what the character Jasmine talks about when she says in that monologue, I'm sorry, Ty, if you're listening to this, I'm going to mess up your lines. It's not that, that's the crazy of Fernbrook. It's not who you are, it's what you become.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's that self-fulfilling prophecy of calling you the animal, calling you the savage so much and treating you like this for so much that eventually you become it.
Yes.
And that ain't who you are, it's just what you became.
Right.
And that's like, that's you know, like, that's key, man.
What is it? A secondary deviance is what they run it as. Mm-hmm. And being once you're labeled, and that label is what's getting projected onto you, after a while, you just start taking it. This must be what I am.
Right.
And so, or I'm just going to step up and fill that role.
Right. Right.
Fill that role because it's been put on me. And I think there's a lot of us, we talk about that on this, of breaking down that idea in these labels and these roles we thought we were going to be or were supposed to be based on what was put on us young.
Right.
And then it took us a while to get, you know, become adults and navigating this world in a little bit of a different way and seeing like, oh yeah, that means nothing. Okay. That really means nothing. Right. I thought that. And I carried that with me. I built a lot of my ideals on that, but
that's like Xavier's character, my dad.
Mm-hmm.
He Reggie, the guy who played the actor who plays him, was talking about how when he was doing his research for the character, he was like, "Yeah, he thinks he grew up with the dad who told him this is what you need to do to be successful. You got to go make money. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to provide. You got to support. You got to be the man of the house and support for your family, right?"
Mm-hmm.
So he went out and he did that. He became a supporter, became a provider, and did great at that. But by doing this and focusing so much on that, he lost his family. He lost contact with his family. You know, by trying to hold up to these old ideas of manhood, what it means to be a father, he actually, and Reggie says, it's presence over presence. You know what I mean? It's being there over giving me money on my birthday, or, you know what I mean, taking me to the park or something. It's like, or you know, doing something monetarily. It's like, no, come and be there for me.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I think when Xavier chooses to do this sperm thing and create this business or whatever and become successful, he loses me. He emotionally is detached from my mom. And I think that was what broke them up. It's not a physical cheat, it was an emotional thing. He left her emotionally, and so she left him. You know what I mean? And because he wasn't there in my life, because he was out working or whatever, I felt abandoned as a son. And so it just goes back into these just these ideas of what worked in one time doesn't work now, or what used to be actually isn't, maybe it's like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How you were raised or how your dad raised you is not necessarily how you should raise me.
And that, what is that? I keep seeing the right of like, you got to stop raising your children for the future, their future, as opposed to your past. Like,
Yeah, boy.
Just how heavy that one is.
Yeah.
But again, there is, as simple as it's put out there, you don't know what you don't know. Right. And we talk about that often. You don't know what you don't know. And I think there's a lot of people that are just not equipped. I would say in this time now, though, it's a lot easier to say that you don't have information because you got so much access to it. But there's a lot of people who are just taking on what was given to them and they're not really doing exploring for themselves as far as who they are as individuals, as parents, as spouses, whatever. And it takes somebody to be able to see something. You know, I think about even coming here, moving to this place, or moving to the Northwest in general, and being able to see something different than California, that gave me a different look at just how life could be. That let me see that there was more opportunity than what I was understanding was there and available for me where I was at. And so it's about seeing something else. Up until that point, I didn't know anything else. So this is how I operated.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've sat at tables that I never thought I would be sitting at. And sitting across from people I never thought I'd be sitting across from.
and this was never talked to me. This was never told me that I was never told this was a possibility.
Right.
So being in these buildings and being in these places and these spaces and having engagement with certain individuals, sometimes I have to sit back and really, you know, process that through that. It took being out of this element,
right,
because I was just being, they did their best, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did their best, but I got myself and started exploring myself.
Yeah.
And got out here and really start moving around a bit, and that's what's kind of helped. And I think that, you know, all of our paths are similar, yeah, in that way, mm-hmm, that we got out here and had to figure ourselves out without that safety net and kind of being thrown into the fire, as they say.
Yeah, boy.
I'm not going to stay in it. I'm going to get back to a calm place.
My safety net was 3,000 miles away, so I had to figure it out. But I was like, look, I mean, I landed here, bro, I had negative $300 in my bank account.
Mm.
I had spent it all for my bags to get on the plane to get over here.
Oh.
I was broke. Look, if I didn't have that free housing, bro, I'd be out in the cardboard box on the sidewalk or something. I don't know.
Jeez.
But I was like, look, I'm gonna figure it out. I'm gonna figure it out. I told my mom, she was like, Tev, you sure you want? I was like, Mom, I'm here. I landed. I'm broke now, but I won't be broke later. I'll figure it out. She's like, okay.
Right. Spoke some things into the universe and they appear.
Having that faith, man. You know, that's something that we talk about a lot too, trying to encourage, you know, people to trust the process, you know, trust the energy, trust the universe. We find that lives turn out a lot more meaningful. That you understand the world a little bit clearer, mm-hmm, that you don't take things personal as much,
right,
as you start to trust your universal instincts, and you just kind of don't question it no more.
Yeah, especially the good. Don't question the good. Just say thank you and keep moving.
Yeah, and even when the bad comes, you know, we develop in a mindset to where we realize that most of these things aren't personal, so we're not taking them too hard.
Right.
You know, and that's keeping our mind focused and able to deal with the normal trials and tribulations of the world.
That's major. Yeah.
While still being able to stay positive even under adverse circumstances.
Right.
That's kind of what the secret is. And you know, and so understanding that it's bigger than us,
mm-hmm,
and that we gotta, our calling is bigger than us, bigger than what we want to do, what we thought we was gonna do, where we thought we was gonna live, you know, jumping on the bus or the plane, and you know, just risking it all, man, for something that you believe in. It's gonna work out.
Yes. And people gotta understand that, man. You gotta have patience. Like you got. Like what Nip say? Dedication, hard work plus patience.
Yeah.
It's like that's what it is, bro. Work hard, stay patient. Cause yes, it's gonna get rough. Yes, I even after I got my bank account out of the negatives, a couple years later I was broke again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm,
but I'm still working. Yeah. I'm still staying on the path until eventually it was like, oh, got a TV show. Oh, got another TV show. Oh, got a show that's touring. Oh, great, I'm paying rent 2 months ahead of time. Oh, snap, you know what I mean? And it started working out because I knew, I was like, all right, I'm going through a rough patch. It is what it is.
That's that.
Didn't take it personal.
Just accepted where I was, realized where I was, and was like, all right, now how do I get out of this? How do I get out of this hole?
So let me ask you this, with this, is this how you always were? Or was there a period in life that, you know, it was somebody bestowing some game upon you, some literature that you read, like, or has this just been your mindset since?
I think, just being honest, I think there have been some people who have kind of dropped in a few gems along the way. Probably, it's just not on my conscious mind. Unconscious, subconscious, somewhere, still percolating.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I think it has been just my own drive.
Okay.
Probably my mama, too, because she gave me the drive early on when, like, I was young, and I said, Mom, I want to play T-ball. And she'll be like, okay, well, what do you need to do? You know what I mean?
Right.
And so she was like, she kind of pushed me and encouraged me, go get all the information, you do the work and come back to me, so all I gotta do is just sign my name on the paper.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that drive has just been in me all of my life, and I guess just as I got older it just grew and just kept growing and kept growing. And I'm an avid reader. I was a philosophy and religion minor in college.
Okay.
And so I'm always trying to study the greats, mm-hmm, the great philosophers, the great spiritual leaders, and trying to figure out, okay, what did they say or do that helped push them?
Yes.
What is the, you know what I mean? And I'm big on spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that there is always an incubation phase for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Nothing just is like, it just booms. Nothing booms. Mm-hmm. Even the universe, it was like, it was kind of incubating, and then something happened. Mm-hmm. It happened, and then there was another incubation phase, stay. And that's, it's like, you know, it's the cocoon, yes. You know what I mean? Yes. So I've always had that drive, man. I hope it never leaves. I'm able to pass that on to my future unborn kids and family and friends, and anybody who I come in contact with, because, okay. Yeah, I love that initiative, man.
A lot of times, you know, people just born with that. You don't always have the opportunity to use it or take advantage of it, right. But a lot of times that people are just born with the drive to do better and want to know more, mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. And sometimes I think that's just a gift in its own, because the more you learn, you just start to become wise. You start to just trust the process more. But I have one quick question. You study philosophers. You read a lot. Let me ask you, do you find any similarities amongst, is there like a base or a universal concept that you know that most philosophers or successful people live by?
No.
They're all different?
They're all different. I think, honestly, I would think the base thing that I would say that's true is know yourself, or as the ancient Egyptian used to say, know thyself.
Right.
The more you know, and different cultures say it in different ways, but the more you understand yourself and your way of thinking, mm-hmm. and your way of being, the more philosophical you can be. You can say, this is why I think the earth is flat, because this is, you know what I mean? Right. This is why I think that we came uh-huh. from Sirius B. This is why, uh-huh. whatever it is, that I think it comes out of first, which is what most philosophers think, is know yourself. Mm-hmm. Develop your own sense of self, your own thought process. Learn the world, and then learn how to see it from your perspective, and then learn how to articulate your perspective. Mm-hmm. So from what I have studied, nobody is really, most people aren't really saying the same thing or don't have the same thing, you know what I mean? But and that's because they're philosophers, and everybody's trying to be different and create their own philosophy, right. You know what I mean?
Okay. I want to make sure, I want to touch on the conversation theater right quick.
Yeah, most definitely.
And get in that. We got probably about another 9 minutes left, so want to touch on that. Yeah, we went through that thing.
Wow, yeah.
But just want to let you kind of speak to that and let the people become aware.
Confrontation theater was...
You started that, right?
Confrontation theater, that's my joint. Mm-hmm. It began as a project in my undergrad back at FAMU. Okay. In my theater management class, and my teacher, the project was to create a virtual theater and kind of like plan out 10 to 20 seasons, okay. You know what I mean? And so I did, and as I'm creating it, I had like people like Malcolm X and Bob Marley and Nina Simone and Josephine Baker like on my board, yeah. and that sort of thing. Just people who like, I was like, okay, these things about them is what I want from like real people, you know what I mean? Like these qualities. Created a season of plays, you know, had the scale of theater I wanted, which is like a Lort theater, which is like a big theater. Lort is like a large resident theater.
So
I did this whole thing, and when I got to the naming part of it, and I'm sitting there and I'm in my room and I'm like, okay, what name? And one of my spiritual fathers is Bob Marley.
Okay.
And so I had Bob playing on the background as I'm like doing my work. And the album that was playing was his last album before he passed, okay. Confrontation.
Okay.
And so I'm listening to the album, and the song Black Man Redemption is playing. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah. And I'm looking at what I'm trying to do. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is it. I'm like, Redemption Theater. Nah, that ain't it. That ain't it. Confrontation Theater. It's like, oh, yeah, that's it. I like Confrontation Theater. And listening to the song in really the album, in the album he's confronting white supremacy, he's confronting religion, he's confronting political mess, he's confronting love, mm-hmm. he's confronting all of these things. And when we think confrontation, we mostly just think like it's going to be a fight, you know what I mean? Aggression versus aggression, when really no, it's just I'm coming at something mm-hmm. intentionally with the intention to address it, whether it's my own biases, my own truths, my own insecurities,
right.
my history, whatever. And I loved it. And so I decided to keep that name. I finished the project. My professor thought it was great. She was like, hey, if you ever get a chance to do this somewhere, you should really do it. I'm like, okay, I hear you. And then I went and came to Portland. Stayed out here for a year and realized that there was a bunch of companies trying to do black work, but there wasn't a lot of black companies doing the work.
Okay.
but yet they are calling black people in for like consulting or for whatever reason. So I was like, okay, well, and then black people were also complaining about not having enough work for us. And I'm not a complainer. If I see something wrong, I'm like, okay, well, here's my two cents to try to fix it. You know what I mean? And so I created the company. And so we started at the Portland Playhouse with in May 2016. It was I founded it as its artistic director. Andrea Vernay, my homegirl, my right hand woman, is my right hand woman. She started as our managing director, and is now our artistic associate. So she helps me with the art part of it. Phil Johnson is our technical director and sound designer in Pipeline, and Tamara Lynn is our marketing communication director, and Jasmine Cottrell is our education director. And so yeah, so we did show after show, we did readings, we did this play called The Every 28 Hours Plays, which is based on the stat that every 28 hours a black person is killed in the United States by law enforcement. And that was the number that they went with, because it was like, it's actually sooner than that. It's actually like 23 every 23 every 24 hours or something like that. A black person in the United States is killed by law enforcement, literally. And that was based on a stat that came out of 2016 or 2017. And so we did that play, then we went on, did a comedy, and then last year we did our first co-production with Milagro Theater on a play about suicide. It's about this family who has been affected by two members who have committed suicide. And now this third member, Andrea Vernay, played the lead, was contemplating suicide herself until she meets this guy who's also contemplating suicide, and their connection kind of stops the other one from killing themselves or harming themselves. So yeah, man. So we've done some interesting work. We did a show that was that most church folks won't like, because it was the person play about this preacher who contracts young college men to have sex with him. And his wife, the preacher's wife, creates and manages the contract between her husband and his lovers. Wow. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
So she knows about it.
Oh yeah, she's in on it. Yeah, I think she is the one, if I remember the script correctly, she like vets him out. He goes, okay, I like these three, and then she interviews him, and then she goes, okay, I like these two, let's bring them in for like a second interview or whatever, and then he'll pick one, and then they go off and do their thing.
You got the job.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, man, we did a reading of that show, and it was very well received. And me and Andrea talked to the playwright recently about how can we get it out here. So we're talking about what's next, you know what I mean? That might be, we'll see, you know, that might be on the horizon. But yeah, Confrontation Theater, man, our mission is to produce work by and about the African diaspora. If you don't know what diaspora means, that's black people anywhere on the planet.
Anyway. Okay, so tell people where they can find you, how they can see the plays, or how they can connect with you and your company.
Oh yeah, most definitely.
Because they're going to be listening.
ConfrontationTheater.com. You can reach us at ConfrontationTheater.com. You can email us at ConfrontationTheater@gmail.com. The play Pipeline takes place at the Portland Playhouse. That's on 602 Northeast Prescott Street. So if you're in the Northeast King neighborhood, come by and holler at us. If you are a resident of the King neighborhood, you get a discount anytime you come and see a show at the Portland Playhouse.
And if you live in Gresham or Beaverton, still go find them.
You
need to see that regardless.
Yeah, most definitely. We don't let ticket prices discourage you. We have Arts for All, which is $5 tickets. We have Rush tickets, which is another way to say a wait list. That's just $20. If you are an artist in the industry at all, a designer, a writer, an actor, a dramaturg, whatever, you can get a $10 Rush ticket. So we got a lot of different ways for you to see the show. We would never turn somebody away just because of money, because this show is too important.
Yes, way too important. Yes.
Too powerful.
Yeah, definitely the best, the best play I've seen, man. On TV and off. Damn. You know, that was,
hey, that's
just
love, bro.
I mean, you just gotta think about the relatability, though. I've never seen it approached from that angle. That's a deep angle that the United States especially needs to understand this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, so thank you for doing that, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, you translate well. Again, everybody that was on that stage and the people behind the scenes, everybody did that thing.
Yeah.
And that was
it's a great group to be with, man.
Yeah.
I mean, teachers need to see it, you know.
Oh, teachers most definitely, man. I think teachers,
fathers need to see it.
Teachers.
No, yes.
Mothers, you know, definitely black mothers.
Right. All the angles.
Like it's really, you know, it's really transparent, man. And This is the things that we've been unable to say all these years. Somebody's saying it now. You need to go see that.
Yeah. And look, when you were giving off the 10 points, I was trying to, I couldn't get my little writing tab that I had with me because I was trying to jot down because I feel like that was a perfect summary of what to say.
You want them to say it again?
Yeah, write them down right quick. We got a moment.
Omari gives, this is the instructions he gives at the end of the play. One, hear me out. Two, let me chill sometimes. Three, know when to back off. Four, know when to keep pushing. Five, let me have some space. Six, don't assume me for the worst. Seven, show up in person. Eight, be fair. Nine, forgive that I'm not perfect. And then he leaves you to fill in the 10th blank.
Man.
Pow.
Well, thank you, sir, for showing up here and doing this.
Thank you, man. I'll do this anytime, man.
Yeah.
I love this, man.
Yeah, we have to do something else again, man. We can't let this be the last time we connect.
Not at all. This is the beginning.
People, you heard that. Listen, go check it out. You won't be sorry. I've been telling people all day, though. I have people buying tickets today.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, I'm going to buy it right now. I say you need to go see this play.
I've dropped the link to it.
Yeah, for real, because I think we're starting, like we sold out the first week pretty early on, and I think we're getting back to selling out because now reviews are out and people have seen it now.
Yeah.
And so the word is spreading. So hurry and get your ticket because seats are going away quick. Quick. So come on and see us.
All right. With that being said, we've wrapped up another episode. You want to give them the places they can find us, sir?
Yeah, make sure you check us out on all the socials. IG at Calculated Conversation, Twitter at Calculated Talk, Facebook, Calculated Conversation Radio Show. We on www.calculatedconversation.com, iTunes, Google Play Store, and in your local city.
Hey,
keep it popping. Calculated out.
Calculated everything.
If Yella makes it a cappella, I still express yo, I don't smoke weed or sex. Cause it's known to give a brother brain damage, and brain damage on the mic don't manage nothing but making a sucker in you equal. Don't be another sequel. Spread yourself. My boy, I'll show you how your track.
What up?
Drop English right about now. Getting back to the PG, that's program, and it's easy. Dre is back, new jacks are made hollow. Expressing ain't the subject because they like to follow the words, the style, the trend. The records I spin again and again and again. Yo, you're on the other end. Watch your brother blend dope rhymes with no help. There's no fessing or guessing while I'm expressing myself. It's crazy to see people be what society wants them to be, but not me. Ruthless is the way to go, they know. Others say rhymes which fail to be original, or they kill where the hip-hop starts. Forget about the ghetto and rap for the pop charts. Though some musicians, cuz at home, they're scared to use profanity. When up on the microphone, yeah, they want reality.
you hear none. They'd rather exaggerate a little fiction. Some say no to drugs and take a stand, but after the show, they go looking for the dope man. Or they ban my group from the radio here in WA and say hell no. But you know it ain't all about wealth, as long as you make a note to spread yourself.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Free Beginners Girl Ultimate Frisbee Clinics on Saturday, March 14th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. and again in the evening from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Gabriel Park in Portland. These free clinics are geared towards girls in grades 3rd through 8th who have little to no experience with frisbee. Clinics will be coached by volunteer women players and assisted by girls from local high school teams. Again, that's Free Beginner Girls Ultimate Frisbee Clinics on Saturday, March 14th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. and again in the evening from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Gabriel Park, Southwest 45th Avenue and Vermont Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm at the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Disco beat